Hello and welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby Podcast. I'm Jamie McMillan. On the show this week, we're joined by Andy Christie after his selection in the upcoming Guinness Six Nations. And we hear from Scotland Sevens head coach, Kieran Beattie. Well, Rach Mossy, it's a big day today for Scotland men's team as they announced the squad for the upcoming 2022 Guinness Six Nations. Quite a lot to get through on this squad, quite a lot to talk about with some new names coming in, some old faces returning. So we'll look at the forwards first, shall we, Rach? We see a number of players coming in. Andy Christie comes in from Saracens, who we chatted to earlier on, who'll be on the podcast later on. And Rory Darge gets his first involvement with this national team, hopefully after injury in the autumn. And obviously he's done really well for Glasgow. But what do you make of those two forwards, Rach, coming in to bolster the Scotland squad?
Yeah, Darge is one we've talked about a lot on the podcast over the last couple of weeks, but obviously kind of the last year or so. And I think a really well-deserved inclusion in the squad. I think he's just always looking for work, playing for Glasgow. He's such a menace around the breakdown and in attack as well. Just like really exciting, a real threat and a real good ball carrier. And Christie coming in from Saracens, don't know quite as much about him, but from what I've seen, again, a really kind of dynamic ball carrying back row, and the guys that are in there that we know. So things like Bradbury's having the season of his life at the moment. Josh Bayliss is always very kind of attacking threat, lots of work and the kind of ball carrying threats of Fagerson and Haining and then Watson as well. So it's just like that back row for me is, I don't know where I'll start to choose it. Richie as well, yeah.
Or Jamie and Andy as well.
It's full of talent, full of different types of players. You can kind of go anywhere with it.
It's funny, isn't it? Because there is so much quality there and there's so much power, there's so much experience. And we always say you need that in the back row. And one of the most crucial things is getting the right balance. And you'll know more than me, Rach, about the kind of the six, seven and eight. It's not often the three best players out of the group of six or seven. It's the best balance and the best understanding. And that'll be hard to find because there are so many good players in there, but they have to work well together as well. A bit of experience, a bit of kind of new blood. So that means to me is if next week's camp and certainly the training ahead of the kind of the English week becomes really important for trying to find that balance, testing the players in different situations alongside different players. I mean, there's a lot of known in there as well with the units working for Edinburgh, for Glasgow, or in the past for Scotland. But yeah, getting that balance is key, isn't it?
Yeah, I think as well, like you say, there's a lot known. So the likes of Jamie Ritchie, Hamish Watson, and probably Matt Fagerson playing as a back row together, they know that is kind of a good mix in terms of balance. So I would imagine, looking at it, they'll look to kind of bring one into that, try it out, etc., and play around with it that way. But there's just so much you could do with it. It's a really exciting place in terms of where Scotland are at with their back row.
Line out elements as well, isn't there? I mean, it's brilliant. It's such a depth, and still, you know, bringing in Andy Christie new as well, bringing him into that environment, and as you say, big dynamic ball carrier. He's great in open field. Suits again how, you know, Gregor likes to play in terms of big men running out wide, athletically distributing, even helping out with counter-attack and turnover attack. It's a competitive squad all round, but it's certainly a competitive back row.
Ross, moving into the backs then, scrum half, there's a tremendous amount of competition in that role, and we're seeing some new names pop up. Ben Vellacott of Edinburgh comes in for his first involvement with the Scotland team, and Ben White from London Irish as well. A lot of competition there, but interesting to see what Ben White can bring his time at London Irish. But Ben Vellacott obviously done really well for Edinburgh this season, hasn't he? And has added so much to that squad since he joined.
Yeah, I mean, it's similar to Rory Darge in the back row for Glasgow. I mean, the consistency and outstanding performances has been, you know, like what we spoke about, Darge has been the same for Ben Vellacott. Bringing an attacking tempo and a pace and a real dynamism, really, in a crucial position. Thriving under Mike Blair and the squad at Edinburgh. So he absolutely deserves his inclusion. Some were surprised he wasn't involved in the November series, but you know, that his form's consistently continued through, and he's deserves one. Really tough selection for the nines for me. Ben White is he's 23. He's quite a reasonably young player as well, but really solid scrum half. Good pass, good kicking game. He'll challenge around the edges. Just a really quality all round number nine. And Ali Price is in there as well, obviously. But you know, there's kind of two omissions in there, and at least two omissions really. And Jamie Dobby and George Horn, who haven't had a lot of game time. They haven't had a lot of rugby under the belt, but quality players as well. So the depth there. We said last week, just you know, we'll look ahead to the squad on you know, this week's podcast. And I said last week there's going to be quality players disappointed because there is so much depth. Midfield as well, I'd say, in most positions actually, but certainly the nines midfield, there's so many, you know, really good players who have been left out. It's a 39-man squad, so you have to draw the line somewhere. But you know, it's good to see some new faces coming in, and they'll be tested environment and hopefully do well.
Yeah, you mentioned 39-man squad, and there's still some notable omissions in the sense of some people who have got some, you know, still playing in their prime and had some, you know, a lot of caps. People like Fraser Brown, for example, Hugh Jones, another one who doesn't make the squad. So do you think there's ever been this? I know it kind of goes in peaks and troughs, but do you think, Rach Mossy, there's probably the best depth that we've had in a lot of positions in a long time at the moment, with the fact that we can have a 39-man squad but still have these top players unfortunately missing out?
From my point of view, it's the best Scotland squad, and wider than that as well, that I've seen in a long, long time. I can't think of a squad as strong as this, and especially, you know, in key positions as well. And I think it's testament to the pro teams and how they're playing as well. I think both Edinburgh and Glasgow have had really good seasons, and it, given the individuals within those teams the opportunity to push on. And yeah, from my point of view, I think it is the strongest Scotland squad we've had in a long time. And like you say, some of the omissions is not through any fault of their own, but just through the kind of depth of talent across all the positions and how well all players playing. And also, the number of players available is also a key one, yeah. I think. You know,
yeah.
There's not, touch wood as I speak, not a huge number of people unavailable through injury at the minute. This has probably been the biggest pool of players that Gregor's had to choose from in a while as well.
So much quality. We keep saying the same thing, like broken record, but a good way of kind of highlighting that, you know, kind of just looking through the squad, picking out names who are almost coming back into the squad who weren't involved in November, or maybe haven't been involved for 6 or 8 months or so. Magnus Barbie, W. Pinnell, Johnny Gray through injury mainly, Rory Hutchison, Mark Bennett.
Yeah.
I mean, these are guys coming back in. As well, not just kind of the new faces spoke about, or the quality that's already there, or dropping out, and say Hugh Jones, Adam Hastings is an interesting omission really for me. Is obviously moved down to Gloucester, has been heavily involved and with Scotland over the last maybe two, three seasons. I mean, the door's absolutely open for everybody, and there will be injuries to come in, but it's that's another. An example of how difficult it is, or how well you have to be playing to merit your selection for the national side, which is exactly what you want. And it means those in the squad will work hard. They'll be aware of how special it is to be in there, because they just have to look over their shoulder and see how good a player that haven't been initially selected. So it's a tough old gig picking a 39. Out of the players available, it'll be even harder to pick a 23 and a 15.
Well, so you were mentioning some players there that have come back in, and another player who's actually coming in for the first time is Kyle Rowe from London Irish, the winger. What we made of him at London Irish? I think he's had a pretty good season so far, but you know more than me, so give us a brief on that boy.
He's I mean, it's his first season at London Irish, left Edinburgh. Actually played the last game for Edinburgh at the end of last season. Played really well just down against Scarlets. Heavily involved with our sevens team for a while in and around, certainly academies in age grade and sevens. So, really attack-minded player. Good player, good in the air. Classy, really quick. Classy winger in terms of his footwork. And he's really hit the ground running in London Irish. Scored a try at the weekend against Edinburgh. So it'll be his first involvement with the national team as such, but he'll know a lot of the players. He's been with most of the players for the last three or four years. So it's great to see somebody who's who's moved on to pastures new and being rewarded for the form he's shown.
Well, delighted now to be joined on the podcast by Andy Christie, who's been selected in the squad for the upcoming Guinness Six Nations. Andy, how does it feel when I say that, that you're in the squad for the upcoming Six Nations? How does it all feel for you?
It's not sunk in at all yet. It doesn't really feel real, to be fair. Like, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. I can't believe it.
Is it such a big shock? I mean, obviously, you've been playing well. You've been involved in, a fair few years ago now, involved in national squads with Scotland with some of the guys. But, I mean, you sound really shocked and obviously delighted. But is as big a shock as you sound?
I think it's probably bigger, to be fair. Like, this season, I guess, I've only really started consistently starting games and playing for Saris. So I guess I've just been taking things step by step. So I didn't expect anything like this to come sort of so soon. So I just, can't believe it. It's kind of, it's just blown me away, really.
And tell us a little bit around how you found out you were going to be involved in some of the conversations coming before that as well.
So as I was saying to you guys before, like, I'd only spoke to Gregor for the first time 2 days ago. So he gave me a call and just said, wanted to kind of get to know me a bit and get sort of a feel of what I'm like and what, what suits me. And just had a really nice chat with him, really honest chat. And he just sort of said, I've been playing well and would I be sort of keen to be in the mix and that I'm being looked at. And I didn't actually think much of it. I thought, he's just sort of touching base and the squad's there and that's that. So I obviously said yes, like, absolutely, if there's any opportunity, I'll be absolutely buzzing. I thought it might just be a case of getting in for like a training camp kind of thing just to get a feel of it. And then, he called me yesterday. So it was as soon as training finished. So I had a missed call from him. So I ran upstairs into like a private room and called him myself. And he just sort of said, congratulations. And gave me a load of feedback, which I didn't listen to at all. Because I was just, I was too busy. So like laughing and crying and just being happy. So
yeah,
it was always like massive roller coaster.
What's the first thing you did when you found out?
I told my my housemate and Sean Rafael. So he was in the change room downstairs. I tried to keep it sort of a bit low key. I had to walk past a load of coaches and just kind of grinning ear to ear. Went and told Sean, and then as soon as I got home, called all my family. I actually filmed their reactions, which are it's an incredible memory. I called my mum first, and she was walking the dogs, and she like hit the deck. I told her, she screamed and just she was in like a forest somewhere and just like hit the deck and the dogs were like jumping on her and she just like screaming and crying. It was incredible. So
your mum actually fainted at the news.
she's walking, she's like, I've got to sit down, and just dropped on the floor in like a dirt track, and I was like, all right.
I think that video could definitely go viral. I think
you need to get that up.
The world needs to see that.
Yeah, but I have to. She lets me. I'll drop that.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing! Now, what?
And your brother as well? Because we were talking before. Your brother was involved with Scotland age grade as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
A few years back. Yeah. Did you speak to him?
I did. I FaceTimed him. He was at work, so he couldn't really react. So
did you do that? Really serve it? That really kind of serious reaction, where not to let on, deep down he was delighted.
Nah, his face, he's actually put it on his Instagram story, the reaction. He couldn't sort of shout or scream, but he was just cheesing.
Good lad.
And just said he'd call me back later. But he said it was, one of the best moments of his life, me telling him. Good. So, it was special.
So, Andy, let's get a little bit of insight into your rugby journey. And we know you've been involved with Scotland before at the representative level, and you're currently at Saracens, where there's a number of Scotland players, Duncan Taylor, Sean Maitland, and Kelly Brown also involved with the club as well. So,
Tim Swinson as well. He'd kill me if I didn't mention him. So, Swinner as well.
Yeah, big Swinner, still going strong down there. A good bunch of lads down there who I'm sure you enjoy playing with. But give us an overview of, who you played with when you played at Scotland and how you got into rugby, essentially.
Yeah, so I guess, one of the main people that I played with, with the under-16s was, as I said to you guys before, was Cam Redbar. So I've known him for years now. We did the whole Exiles program together. Mm-hmm. So we've played together a number of times. we played for England 20s together as well. So this is I can't wait to reunite with him. I'm looking forward to that. So yeah, and since that, you know, obviously been at Sarries, so joined Sarries after the 16s program. So I went to school in London. I moved from Bristol. I went to school in London and joined up with Saracens then and got a contract out of school and just been sort of, yeah, taking it day by day, step by step there. So they've been obviously massive for me.
You mentioned before that this is kind of the first kind of breakthrough season you've had at Sarries. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about this season. I know you're playing largely kind of at eight, but can you play, have you played across the back row, or what you like as a player?
Yeah, so, I suppose like last season I had a bit more of a taste because we obviously went to the championship. So there was more rotation there. So I played a lot of six because obviously we've got Billy and take something very, very special to move him from eight. So, I played a lot of six. I played a bit of seven as well. So I'm kind of, you know, I like to think of myself as being quite versatile across the back row. And to me, it doesn't massively affect how I play, I feel. You know, the things I bring, I like to think it doesn't matter what number's on the back of my shirt. I can kind of try and bring that regardless. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I see that. Like, I see, you know, I've seen your game, seen you impressed, but big ball carrier, really dynamic in the ball, looking for work, looking for, you know, even counter-attack opportunities where you're in the backfield and running well. From what you know and what you've seen of Scotland over the last, you know, couple of seasons, there must be a real excitement for, I believe, what suits your game is to get your hands on the ball in open field and run it. Do you feel as if you could fit into that pretty well?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's something that Gregor and I spoke about and he raised to me as well, just saying that, you know, he feels like I fit what's going on and what's being developed. And I agree with that. And I think looking at, you know, the back row that's already been in place, I think I suit the kind of player that's been playing. So, yeah, it's really exciting for me.
Where were you in the last year, Scotland away to England? That famous victory, where did you watch that game? It was almost a year to the day, and the first game in the Six Nations will be against England, but where did you watch that one?
I watched that at home, actually. I was with my family. That was an incredible game. So, no, that's the kind of memory, obviously, everyone wants to be a part of. And, you know, like those kinds of things, those kinds of results are so exciting, and the kind of results that are coming more and more often for Scotland. So it's definitely something that inspires me and motivates me that I definitely want to be able to, you know, be involved in memories like that.
Is there a bit of a split in your family? You mentioned you've obviously played, you and your brother played Scotland under 16, and then you played a little bit of England age group as well. What's the split in your household when you're Scotland, England?
There's absolutely no split. Honestly, my family, my grandparents especially, so they're pretty rugby mad. And they've always been Scottish. As my mum, so we've, you know, our household's always supported Scotland massively.
Correct answer.
And how, and you'll be involved this weekend in Europe as well. Do you know if you're playing or not yet? Or where's that?
Your mind
has to get on that before meeting up next week. So, what's your thoughts going out the weekend as well?
Yeah, obviously, you know, first things first, I've got to do a job for Sarries. And it's a big game for us because we need the win. So, yeah, first things first, got to take care of business here. And then it's, you know, into camp.
And you can't meet up on Monday. Are you Sunday night you come up?
Yeah, I think fly up on Sunday night after the game and then get into it from Monday to Wednesday.
And are you nervous?
Nah, I don't get nervous. A little bit shaky.
I know. I think changing rooms and squads must be easier to integrate into now, because I remember going back years and years when, I don't know, well, you can tell us if it's easier, Rach as well, but I used to worry about where to go, where to stand, where to change, who to sit next to lunch time. But
I'm a few friendly faces. Yeah, I'm a little bit nervous, to be fair. Obviously I don't know too many people. And yeah, unfortunately, you know, none of the Sarries boys are in this one, so I'm slightly on my own in that sense. So it'll be, you know, I'm looking forward to meeting everyone, and I'm sure they'll be very, very welcoming. So
yeah, they will be. They're a good bunch. They'll look after you, Andy.
Good. That's what I like to hear.
Yeah, we're delighted to have you on the podcast, and even more delighted to hear you're going to be involved with Scotland over the next couple of months. I fear for your mum at Murrayfield. If you get the start against England, she's going to have to be carried out, but I'm sure she'll be fine. But she'll be absolutely delighted that you're representing Scotland, and we're delighted to have you with us in Scotland as well. So well done again, Andy, and best luck for this weekend.
Best luck.
Thank you. We'll catch up with you again
in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. Sounds great. Look forward to it. Cheers, guys.
Cool. Well done, Andy.
Thank you.
Brilliant to hear from Andy Christie on the day that he's announced in the Scotland squad for the first time. Rach Moss seems like a great kid, and I think he'll get a lot out of this camp, won't he?
Yeah, no, we obviously had a real nice chat with him, but I think, you know, he's definitely got his head screwed on right, is how I would put it, in terms of his focuses with rugby and, you know, how honoured he is to be a part of the squad. I think that's always really special, especially for a young player. And, you know, sometimes it can kind of go over their head a little bit, but you can tell just from the way he's talking just how big an honour it is to be selected in the Scotland squad. And I think that's so important going into a new squad and being new within an international team.
It's just great to see the raw happiness is there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like sometimes, and maybe we're part of that as well, where you almost find yourself analytically evaluating everything and looking for this, that, and the next thing. But actually, just to jump in the call and you see somebody so happy with just raw happiness and pride, and it almost resets the fact that how big an achievement and how big a thrill it is. Yeah. You know, I suppose kind of when we're in and around the squad and looking at analytically, it's brilliant just to have a breath of fresh air. I remember, I say, way back in the age grade stuff, him and his brother were involved, 16s and 18s. Eddie Pollock was doing the scrum stuff at that time with age grade stuff, and he spoke so highly about both of them. Ben, his brother as well, was a prop. I didn't know that Andy was a prop at the same time before moving into the back row, but I mean, that would be 7-8 years ago. So, you know, for him to see his kind of ambitions come to fruition with his first involvement was great, but it's just good to see the excitement on his face, and he'll come up and he'll enjoy being part of the squad.
Rach, you asked him the question, where were you? Who did you tell first after you got the news? What about yourself then? Where were you when you first found out, and who was the first phone call you made?
Oh, it was my dad. 100%. Every rugby decision or kind of information always goes to him first. So yeah, that will always be the same.
Nice. And Moss, what about you? Was it a phone call from your who was the head coach that phoned you up then?
I never had phones in those days. I think it was a letter.
a signed letter from the offices of Murrayfield, wasn't it?
Ours was emails.
It was letters officially, but first kind of involvement with Scotland squad was letters to go on tour in the late 90s, way back when. But then I got a phone call, Dougie Morgan, team manager, former scrum half, line coach of Scotland, was team manager at the time, Charlie Shields' granddad, actually, who sadly passed away last year, Dougie Morgan. He was the team manager, and it was him that phoned me to tell me that I was in the World Cup squad in 1999. And I just kept it to myself for a while, to be honest. And I didn't know what to. You're kind of threatened. Listen, this is under embargo. Nobody knows. The squad doesn't go out tomorrow. So I kept it to myself. And then, it was my mom and dad. I was still living at home at the time. So it was an easy message to mom and dad. A warm welcome now along the official Scottish Rugby podcast. Scotland Sevens head coach Kieran Beattie. I know you know Rachel really well. We know each other really well as well. But it's welcome along to the podcast, and I suppose it's the start again of another Scotland Sevens journey after a disrupted few months and years, really. But new in the role, looking forward to it. You've had lots of roles across Scottish rugby, big influence along the way. How excited and how much are you looking forward to this one?
We did a media release in December, I think. 1st of December, and I kind of laugh looking back at it because it wasn't planned, but hopefully it came across how excited I was and how excited. It's good all the boys have come in, all the staff have come in, and they feel the same. It's been a long time coming. I think it was February 2020 we finished up in Vancouver, Sorry. You could kind of hear the word COVID kicking about, and then we got off the plane and we got back to the hotel. On the Thursday, we do like a kind of debrief of the 2 weeks, and then it was like during that day, it was like, oh, everybody leave. We'll let you speak to you on Monday, and we never got back together. And
that was it. So what was that? February 2020. So it was, yeah.
Or it would have been, yeah. So we left in February. So it might have been the beginning of March, end of February. Yeah. So that was that. And then, I know, it's just been what it is. And then I think everybody will look forward to pulling on the jersey this weekend. Hopefully we start it back up.
What's the programme kind of looked like in terms of, have you had the boys back together for a wee bit? Or what kind of training and stuff you had in the lead up?
We got back together on the 1st of December officially. And then we've had a couple of guys in with GB. So they were finishing off that programme. We've had guys in academies and stuff. So that's the way the Sevens works. There's a core group and there's guys dropping in and out. And that's got its real strengths to it as well. So we've probably got a month and a half build up. But the context of being out for so long, it's felt like a couple of days, in all honesty. I think if it rolled from one season to the other, that month and a half would have felt great. But it's good. It's made us, I think I was speaking to you the other day, Mossy, it's just made you focus on the big rocks, really.
Yeah.
It's probably made my coach and everybody else is better, because you're just focusing on the big things rather than getting bogged down in the minutiae of it all. So, no, it's just, it's easy now. We've not lost a game yet, so it's all
good. It's funny because you say you had, you know, there has been a big influence in the GB squad and bringing that in, but there's also like a big window without a lot of sevens having been played or any sevens being played, and there'll be individuals that will be new to the programme as well. I suppose how difficult is it to marry those different experience levels? Because it's almost starting afresh, isn't it? Really coming in under the badge again, under the thistle again of Scotland, with the recent experience of the GB players. But there's a lot of new faces and new people, and there'll be an excitement with that. But it's difficult to marry all that together ahead of a World Series tournament at the end of the week.
Yeah, it is. It's more physically as well. We've had a group of guys playing a great Super Six, which was awesome. Really good level. So they're coming off having played a lot of rugby, but again, not that seven specific fitness or sharpness. You get a couple of guys who've actually not played in the 2 years through injury or various other things. And then you've got a group of GB lads who have actually, they're pretty much roll in one season and another, so we've had to manage their load downtime as well. So you've kind of got everybody coming in at different angles.
Has it been pretty harsh in terms of, you've got one group who are getting brutal, probably death fitness, versus the group who are being like tapered back towards a competition?
It's not brutal for me because I stand and watch. But poor Sean Lamont's at SNC, and I mean, you know, SNC coaches like to plan and they like to have their load-ins. And especially in sevens, when the demands are slightly different, we've got to actually take guys to a level where they can manage these demands, and they are slightly different. There's a far more sort of like speed endurance, and that's difficult on the body, so you can't just jump into that. You've got to progressively manage that. And poor Sean, he's got about 12 different programs running at once, and I'm going, I'm just going to drop that in, and he's like, he's good. Sean's brilliant with that stuff. So, but it is difficult, and even from a rugby perspective, to be fair to the GB lads, one thing we said is they are the guys with the recent experience. So you've got to actually embrace that and go, look, that's, and they're a mature group that have actually said, look, that's great what we did with GB. Here's how it fits into our environment as well. So, they've been really good.
Well, that's one thing I was going to ask. The game changes all the time. Sevens changes as quick as any other sport, if not even more so than 15s, with trends and styles of defence and attack. And like, will there be a change in the game? Has it changed in that 2 years that we've not been there? Is it more physical, less physical? Is there a different defensive system that's in place in terms of, you know, front field, back field? Or do we just have to almost wait and see what happens in the these first couple of tournaments.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there is quicker trends in the sevens game because there's less people on the pitch, so it influences things quicker. I don't know if I'm right in saying that, but I certainly have a feel about it. And you know, I think something to look out for is, and certainly an attack. I always think there's now a progression to kicking, a lot more like kick attack kicks. In sevens, where it used to be the kind of thought process of don't kick and give the ball away.
Keep the ball.
Whereas that seems to be, let's use this as a real weapon now. Defensively, it seems to be far more aggressive. You know, this old school style sevens defence, which was like passive and push them to a touchline. That again, that seems to be changing. So, and that's been in the time I've been away. I'm watching Dubai and I'm watching Edmonton, which GB were on, and that certainly seemed to be the way things were going. And it's whether you fall in line with that or actually you're a bit different or not. So that's good conversations, and it keeps it exciting. It keeps it exciting because you end up playing the same group. There's 16 teams, core teams. So it actually, with the game changes, it allows you to view and analyse differently as well. So keeps you on your toes.
Yeah. Looking obviously at the squad a little bit more closely, you must be, although you've had a couple of years out, you must be pretty excited about their prospects with having such a good representation within that GB squad.
Yeah, I'm really chuffed with the blend. Right, we've got, and it's exactly what the Sevens is about. We've got guys with some really good experience, GB. We've got guys that have performed really well in that Four Stock Super Six. We've got academy lads in there. And we've got guys that have been with us before and not quite made GB, but still have had their experience in these 2 years. So real different blend. Obviously, we're heading into Malaga with the squad, and there's a fair number of new caps. I think six, am I right? Mm. Is that right? You're none, so you must know.
I know there's a lot.
I think six off the top of my head. So that in itself is exciting. And Sevens will provide this. They'll experience something they've not experienced before. I mean, it's crazy. The tournaments are crazy. It comes thick and fast. The levels, quality. Exciting times.
And the Malaga tournament's a World Series tournament, isn't it? It's kind of in the window where the Australia-New Zealand tournaments would take place, isn't it? So it's effectively those tournaments in Europe. Is that the idea behind it being in Malaga? It's for travel and stuff like that.
Again, COVID's kind of dictated quite a bit in terms of the World Series. So they've went double header in Spain, Malaga and Seville. So it's not too bad a replacement. But the traditional would be Hamilton, Sydney, and then you'd roll out to LA, Vancouver, and stuff. So
And who's in the pool? Speaking. Who's in the pool this first up for?
South Africa, Fiji, and England.
Oh, well, hit the ground running, eh?
Yeah.
With six new caps.
Do you know what? It genuinely, and it sounds like you're just saying it. Like, what's a good pool? It's so difficult. It's so competitive. But it was, you know, there's a bit of the unknown as well. Who knows? Who knows how good we're going to be? I mean, I think we look good. I think the squad looks good. Certainly, we've maximised the month and a half we've had together. Like I was saying this to you the other day, I feel really chuffed with how we've used the time, but I still don't know where we're quite going to land yet. But I certainly know where I think we can get to, and I think I feel really positive about this season. It's just where we are at this minute compared to South Africa, who've been unbeaten and
they're established
had run about the whole time.
What does the season look like in terms of, I'm assuming Commonwealth is kind of the peaking point. What does the lead up to that look like?
So we've got a World Series. There's a couple of moving parts potentially in there that just need ironed out. But we've got this World Series, which is highly, massively important in itself. Then Commonwealth Games, and then a World Cup as well. So it's for Scotland Sevens, this is as big a season as you would get, because you get those two kind of key events at the end. The World Series in itself is highly prestigious and tough and great. You know, year in, year out, it does so much for for us in Scottish rugby, with the number of players that come through it, staff as well, and it's just great. Every player I've had in just now, they're like, they're loving it, and they're saying, I can't believe how many times I touch the ball a week now. I've got the good grace to say it's nothing to do with me. It's just the fact that Sevens and there's less people about. There's just less people about, so they do. They get more involvement. So, and you can't, because we've not got the game on the Saturday, the training can be quite intense throughout the week as well. So every session. So naturally.
How often? How often do you play ties, like actual, like simulate a, you know, a tournament or a tie? Because there is Sevens, and we've all played it. It's almost impossible to replicate. Of course you have, Rach. It's almost impossible to replicate that feeling of your lungs burning and thinking you can't put one foot in front of the other. And that's in the first tie. And you almost want to get through that, genuinely want to get through that. And it doesn't get easier, but you get used to it. Mm-hmm. How often and how big a part does playing ties mean to you and your week's plan, your preparation as you build up to a tournament?
Yeah, huge. It's like every kind of rugby coach and rugby environment. It's, you know, you play football, you can play alive football practice in your week. Mm-hmm. It's really tough to play a live rugby game because of the physical nature of the sport, recovery and injury prevention. So again, we've got that here. So we try and replicate the day as a tournament day. So we'll try and have three hits in a day potentially. We try and go back to back days, 3 days potentially as well. Mm-hmm. So that they get used to the spike of having to work hard, bit of downtime spike. Downtime, because that's the downtime is quite a hard thing to manage as well.
Definitely.
But the actual training, again, how we train is we'll do a bit of the talk and walk through and understanding bits, and then we do a bit where it's as hard as we can go, really intense, because that's our game. That it's it's 14 minutes, 20 minutes, and probably if you include the half time and the odd bit of stoppages, 20 minutes, pretty flat out, and that's your session. So there can be a build up, slow at the start and slow at the end if you want to walk through anything, but you just have to train like that because, as you said, training for an hour and a half at a medium pace just doesn't replicate it. Yeah.
And how difficult is that for the new players? Because it is totally different, and a lot of them won't have been exposed to that style of training, even if they've been involved with, you know, say Fosrock Super 6, as you say, or the professional teams and academies. It is geared more to that 80-minute game. And it's a shock to the system. They have to cope well with it, don't they? But it is a shock. Do they look a bit worn out at the end of the first 3 day back-to-back game session?
Yeah. And that's the point, is actually by day three, you should be feeling a bit tired, but you've got to go again, and actually you quickly find out you can,
exactly.
You can do it. If you physically prep, you know, Sean puts them in a great physical condition. It's then just mentally, you know, there are a couple of them when they come in, they say, oh, I need to get my fitness up. And I'm just like, well, you're never going to be fit enough, because actually all that happens is you're within the 20 minute window, you just do more in it. So you always feel like this. Your output becomes better. So it's almost getting used to feeling
awful.
Feeling in that horrible way. Horrible. You put that far more PC than I do.
That's a brilliant way of putting it, though. You're never going to be fit enough. It's brilliant, because that is exactly it. Because if you're feeling comfortable playing sevens, you're not doing enough. Because it is, I mean, you're joking, Rachel. I assume you have played sevens at some point, haven't you?
I've played social sevens.
Yeah, even that, like, you just, I can't describe it. It's just horrible. And you do feel, usually in the first, I call it second wind, you can't go on, but you have to, and you do, and you get through it. And yeah, it's just like, it's a really good way of putting it, that you know, I mean, you can't be fit enough to play it ever, no matter how fit you are, because it is, and even more so now. I mean, we were going back away when I was playing, there was very little physicality in the game. Sevens, really, it was more than a, you know, a kind of aerobic game of running and speed. But now the physical nature, the contest and scrums, the contest at the breakdown, that all has to be factored. It makes it even worse than it was, even worse than the worst memories I have of playing sevens.
It's tough. It's really tough. And I think there's some guys, that's where, I mean, it's changed a bit because of the physical nature of it. The squad size is bigger, even from when I played. You can use your five subs. rather than three back when I played, and that does make a difference, because there is some guys like that are real powerhouses and actually they fall off a cliff edge depending on how the game's going, and that's reality, and then you have to be aware of that. And there's some guys that are, again, actually in sevens as well, there are positions, so you know the physical nature. Against some teams, you know we're going to be under stress and an edge, like these guys are going to work really hard, whereas this guy in the middle is probably going to get a bit of an easier ride in this game, versus if you go into the next game and it's different. So again, that's just comes with analysis and knowing the guys, and as you say, you just got to go through it. And there's a bit of a maturity comes with it at the point where you go, actually, this will end in 20 minutes. It will be horrible. And I will be fine. And I'll be able to go again. And you just got to dust yourself down.
You've got to get that experience to know that.
Exactly. And no matter how hard it is or how miserable, you always manage to lift the trophy at the end of it. That's the other thing. It doesn't seem quite as bad when you're... when you've got a gold medal around your neck, does it?
Absolutely.
What was your social sevens career, Rachel?
There were one tournament long. I have actually been to one sevens camp, I'll say that. Like, that was as long as my Scotland career lasted.
Was Kieran involved there? Because
he wasn't.
Together with the women as well for a while, didn't you?
Yeah, so Kieran was with us. He was with us from a 15s point of view. He was our defence coach for one season, was it? Two seasons?
No, just the one.
Just the one. But great. He made a big impact.
It felt like two.
He came in with a... Do you remember your first... I actually can remember the first meeting you took. Can you remember it? At Surrey Sports Park. He dropped a Formula One video. That was his introduction, and then he had us all from minute one, so it was pretty good.
There you go.
Did a good job.
There you go. It's obviously lasted. That can be a good or a bad thing.
What was the meaning behind the Formula One video for the defence coach?
Well, let's see if Rachel remembers it.
We renamed breakdowns that season pit stops. And we were trying to, from a defensive point of view, make the defences, the other team's pit stops last as long as possible.
There you go.
So his Formula One kind of, I guess, analogy was the pit stops and trying to be as efficient as, the aim of their pit stops to be as efficient as possible. Is that right?
Yeah.
And we also had
a defensive... Have you used that with the sevens, Vito? Have you used that video
trade secrets. Trade secrets gone. Yeah, it's the same one. Just regurgitated. Not at all. No, good, Rich. I'm glad it's lasting. I can remember you were sending like Valentine's cards to doing the Six Nations to all the other players from the pit.
Right, this needs some context.
That was it.
Kieran challenged I think it was me, Lisa Thompson and Rona Lloyd were the defence leaders, weren't we? And Kieran challenged us to think outside of the box to try and get our defensive principles to stick. We had this defensive wheel. It was I can't quite remember off the top of my head, but it was I could if I gave it time, but slowing them down to have time to get organised to whatever, get off the line. So basically, there we go. I think it was actually Rona Lloyd, not surprisingly, came up with these Valentine's Day cards for each person in the team and had a funny line in it about that person. And it had this defensive wheel on it. So during Six Nations, she was putting them underneath people's doors. So no, that is the reason behind that. But yeah, there was a couple of quirky things that season from a defence point of view, but they all stuck, clearly.
Yes, did very well. Good season, enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was good. So
in terms of Malaga and the tournament this weekend, individuals involved in the squad, who are you looking to set an example? Who are you looking to, maybe make a real big impact? Or is there, everybody's the answer to that question, but is there anybody you can rely on or you know you can... you can use to set an example or to use an experience or maybe a younger player in camp who's just going to, just come in and push the boundaries. Is there individuals that you kind of keep an eye on?
I mean, great to have Jamie Farndale back in with us. He's got bags of experience, and he's just such a great guy to have about, great leader in his own aspect. And the good thing about that is, again, with sevens, pretty much everyone has a voice. Everyone can really input, like genuinely have an input, and he really pulls that together quite nicely. He does that really well. So having him in there is great. I'm really excited to see how Jordan Edmonds goes. He's a guy that's really been knocking out the park for a number of years, at club level and then in Four Stock Super Six.
Difficult to stop the ball in hand, eh?
Yeah, very. You got to use him accordingly on a sevens pitch. But I had a good catch up with him today, actually. His transition, because you don't always transition, because they are slightly different games, and he's really put everything into this, and it'll be interesting to see how he goes. I'm not necessarily saying he's going to smash it week one, but by the end of the season, I think he's going to be a really big weapon for us.
On Jordan, we spoke earlier on about how trends change and physicality, but I mean, he could play forwards and backs. He could be disruptive in attack, disruptive in defence. He's going to win most collisions he's involved in. So that adds another dimension to maybe how we've played in the past.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you put him on a 15s pitch, he probably attracts a couple of defenders. You put him on a 7s pitch when there's a bit more space, say attracts a couple of defenders, that leaves a lot of space and a lot of opportunity elsewhere. You couldn't have 7 Jordan Edmonds, but you couldn't have 7 Kalim Barretos either. So you need a real balance in there. It's exciting. We'll see where he goes. He's certainly making the most of it.
Well, Kieran, great to have you on. Thanks for popping along. Brought back some memories for Rachel and testing her knowledge of the defensive system. What, 2 3 seasons ago? 2 3?
I can't remember. 3. It was one more of my first. That, I think it was maybe my second season. So it was 2016? No, 2017.
Good knowledge, anyway. Going way back then. Great to have your time in a busy week. Obviously, back into World Series with Scotland Sevens. And we wish you all the best. So thanks for joining us, Kim.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Great stuff. Thanks, guys.
Well, Moss, it sounded like a great chat you and Rach had there with Kieran Beattie. Now, one thing has changed since we chatted to Kieran, though. Fiji have unfortunately dropped out and they're not going to be replaced in the tournament. But it doesn't take away from the fact that you can hear the excitement in Kieran's voice, and he's just delighted that Scotland's Sevens are going to get back together and get going again in some capacity.
Oh, it's good, isn't it? I mean, you can hear there that, I mean, there's a lot of unknown. It's such a long time since they've been together. There's so much has changed. They've got such a diverse level of kind of current experience in the squad, with either new people coming in, players who've played, you know, a lot of GB sevens over the last 6 to 8 months, and you know, like high level stuff. There's others that have been involved and come back in, so a really diverse mix really of a current experience. But the period they've had together training for this has been really important, and Kieran's worked hard at finding that identity of getting the right balance. And as you can see, you can hear, he's excited about the opening kind of challenge, really, for being back to Scottish Sevens in Malaga. So, there's a bit of unknown around it, but as I say, it's just great to be back representing the national side, and we wish him well this weekend.
That's all from us this week on the official Scottish Rugby podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and as always, we'll be back next week with more exclusive content.